Our guy Ryan Beach is in studio. What's up, Beecher?
Hello, how are you?
Good. John, excited to talk some NHL draft prospects.
Let's go!
We do NFL draft, straight to NHL draft, a full hour with Ryan Beach. So any questions you have, please send them in.
650.
Correct.
You can find us on Twitter. Do I have to throw out all the... Yeah, let's do it. At Ryan Beach, at Satyar Shah, yeah. At John Jang, at Big650, at Sportsnet650.
Get those tweets in. Now, Ryan, we've had a lot of fun talking NHL draft prospects. What have your days been like recently doing all this research and getting it all on the line?
Busy is the right term there. There's not enough hours in the day. I'm excited but also dreading the fact that the U18s have started today because there's now definitely not enough hours in the day. And Easter weekend, family time. So we're going to have to postpone some of those viewings till after the afternoon and try to binge as much as possible.
Is there an egg hunt at the beach abode?
I believe there will be three this weekend. My children's daycare has one that I will attend later this afternoon. And then we're going to a friend's house for one and then our home one. So there will be a lot of candy for me to eat.
No kidding. And all the meanwhile, you are doing all the research, you're crunching numbers, you're looking at the players, you're trying to evaluate what the rankings should look like as we get closer and closer to the NHL draft. And, you know, I think we spent a lot of time over the past few weeks talking about, you know, the 10 position first round. Some people still do have questions about, you know, guys like Bowen Byram. When it comes down to it, do you see a player that just immediately stands out to you right now at 10 so that we can get it out of the way right now? At 10, Vancouver Canucks, this is the guy that I feel strongly they should be selecting.
That's tough.
Or is it still like evaluation mode and you're still kind of like...
I think it still is evaluation mode. We still have the WHL playoffs going on. We have the U18s, as we mentioned. Those are kind of, you know... They're not going to dictate things, but it does allow you to see these players play against each other. For an example, I think two players that are leading that pack is Matthew Boldy and Victor Soderstrom, and they're playing each other in about 2 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. That's going to, you know, that's kind of just ways to kind of add to the pile of evaluation to see how these players can play with different levels of competition and teammates and things like that. So, you know, to kind of answer your question the roundabout way, I think the leaders of the pack are Boldy and Krebs and Soderstrom. Based on needs of what the team might go, and either one of those I'd be okay with.
Is there, ceiling-wise, how much separates those three players from each other?
I think Krebs probably has the highest ceiling of the three, but I think that Boldy would be kind of be right there behind him. I think Boldy's more of a, you know, a strong goal-scoring offensive winger in that sense, where I think Krebs might have a little bit more versatility in the wing, possibly playing center as well, playmaking, shot, things like that. Where I think Soderstrom does have a nice ceiling as well, but that's as a defenseman, as being a, you know, not a safe, but a smart, dependable defenseman who moves the puck well, who's good in all three zones. He might not have a high offensive upside, but I think he'd be he'll be a minute eater for whoever selects him.
The trepidation for a lot of Canucks fans, when they hear Soderstrom, they kind of think back and they're like, well, is this like Olli Juolevi taking a guy that they project to be more an all-around defenseman at the high ceiling defenseman? Is that a faulty comparison?
I think that the apprehension is valid to some degree. I think that Soderstrom, you know, kind of projects in the same overall game as someone like Juolevi, relying on his intelligence and hockey IQ to make things happen. I think Juolevi is a bit more passive than Soderstrom is in terms of play. So I think that that's, you know, something for the checkmark. But we're also talking about 10th overall, mm-hmm. and we're not talking about 5th, and we're likely not talking about, you know, choosing the defenseman at the top of the heap kind of thing. You know, Juolevi was, you know, taken... you know, ahead of Sergachev and Chychrun as the other ones, is kind of that group where I think Soderstrom has probably put himself ahead of the other, you know, defensemen in that group behind Byram.
And obviously, Bowen Byram's a top-rated defenseman in this class, and we saw Central Scouting have him as a second-ranked North American player, which is heady praise, really. I mean, they don't do a comprehensive list for both, so it's hard to say where they rank him. But it's not difficult to envision Bowen Byram moving up all the way to number 3 on a lot of people's draft boards as we get closer to the draft. Are we overstating how good Bowen Byram is? And we have Bill Wilms on, and obviously he covers the Giants every day as color analyst. He watches them play all the time. So I'm not saying he's too high on him, but you do get to watch him every day, and you do fall in love with people you watch a lot, and you see a lot of good trends in him. And he's a guy that's been getting better week in and week out. But ultimately... are we overstating how good he is given the overall lack of high-end talent in the defensive group this year, or is he legitimately a guy you look at and say, yeah, he could go three, and that's very justifiable?
A little bit of both, to be honest with you. I think that he's being slightly overvalued just because he is separated from that second tier of defensemen, and you know, there is a gap just given how this class is kind of setting itself up, and that results in, you know, the overvaluing of a defenseman. But with that being said, I don't think going third overall or fourth overall is too crazy or far out there. I don't think that that's an insane place to take him. We've seen that defensemen are, you know, being more valued in the draft, and teams are willing to take them earlier, and it could happen. You know, in the drive in here, I was kind of wondering, do I see Chicago taking Bowen Byram? I think it's entirely possible, but they've done some good work there with their defensemen in terms of Boyquist and Yuka Harju. Maybe they go for more some offensive punch to kind of complement the group they have there. So maybe he falls to fourth, and then, you know, maybe Colorado takes him to join Makar, and Barry is kind of more of a more 200-foot defenseman. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. At that point, it's splitting hairs, and it can depend on what a team needs, because these high-end players are going to make more of an immediate impact, and that positional need may be more of a tipping point than, say, 15, 16, you know, further later in the draft kind of thing.
Well, that's kind of how Vancouver has gotten a little bit lucky over the past two drafts, is that the teams ahead of them had different needs, maybe positionally, or they evaluated players a little bit differently. So you end up getting Pettersson at five. You end up getting Quinn Hughes at seven. I could see a similar instance happening at this year's draft. And, you know, Ryan, first question for you right now. Watching the NHL playoffs as they are shaping out in front of us every single night, is there, like watching Cale Makar, for example, does that help you maybe put a little bit more stock into some of the defensemen in this year's draft because of the impact he's having for the Colorado Avalanche? Or is it hard to say that simply because Cale Makar and his skill set might be pretty difficult to find in this year's draft, for example?
Yeah, I think it will be tough. I don't think there's a player of his kind of ilk or caliber in this draft class, but I think that that can help players like Bowen Byram's stock to stay more stable than, you know, the other players leapfrogging him, because there's so much value in the ability to generate offense from the back end and be dependable defensively. And I think that that's Byram's, you know, calling card, is that he's able to transition the game, you know, in the right direction, and also join in the rush to create odd man chances and create those offensive opportunities by creating, you know, positive man situations for the Giants. And that's how he can, you know, make things happen. And I think that a team who's looking to increase their speed through the movement of the puck, mm-hmm. will look at Bowen Byram and say, okay, that's going to help our transition game. That's going to help us, you know, get offense created through rush and having that fourth man jumping into the rush. So, yeah, I think that it does help those stock. No matter what, defensemen are going to see their stocks rise as we approach the draft, just because of how much value there is. And you know, players like Cale Makar or even Quinton Hughes, their ability to join NHL teams at such a young age and make an impact does definitely help them, because I think there's always that sentiment that defensemen take longer to develop, and they're going to, you know, if you're taking a defenseman in the first round, you're not going to see them for 3 or 4 years. But if you can get that right one, you're going to get an impact 18 months, 24 months after you take them.
Staying with Colorado then for a second, Mikko Rantanen, this is good news for Canucks fans. Mikko Rantanen went 12th overall back in 2015. And now I think people look back on it and say, how the heck did that happen, considering the season that he had? I look at big guys, yeah, 10th overall. When I look back at this year's draft rankings throughout the whole season leading up to the final one from Central, Raphaël Lavoie, right, this big center in the queue, he's 6'4", almost 200 pounds already. His final ranking now is lower than it was midterm. He was 13th mid. He's 20 in the final rankings. Is this a guy in Raphaël Lavoie who might have a similar sort of playing profile as like a Mikko Rantanen, a guy who's got the big body and frame? He plays down the middle. He's got skills from what I've heard, but for some reason, he seems to be kind of seeing his name and draft stock fall right at the worst time.
Yeah, and I think that it has to do with the fact that he had such a great draft -1 year last year, that there was so much excitement around what he could be as a player. He was invited to the summer showcase to play for Canada, ultimately didn't play because of injury. But he's a player that, you know, he just hasn't been able to reach the expectations that were placed on him to enter the year, despite still having a really good season. And I think he's had a really strong playoff, showing off his goal-scoring abilities and to create offense in that sense. I think the biggest difference in his game compared to someone like Rantanen is, I think Rantanen plays with pace, he plays with speed, he can keep up with the MacKinnon and Landeskog in the way that they play, because as we've seen what they've done to Calgary is Calgary can't keep up with those three, and then they can create offense in any way possible. I think the concern with Lavoie is that he's not able to play with that same pace. Could he learn how to do that if he's playing with the right players? I think that's possible, but I think that that's part of the reason why we're seeing his stock slightly fall. But he, you know, I think he appears to be a really good value bet in that late first round or possibly early second if his stock continues to fall here.
And if we're going to look at that range, Ryan Suzuki is a player who's also kind of in the same range as, you know, Kaliev even, and like you mentioned, John. But what is his ultimate upside? Is it even as high as his brother's?
No, I don't think so. I think entering into the year, there was a lot of excitement about him and saying that he could be the better Suzuki brother, but I think he hasn't been able to take that next step forward as Nick did. I think that Nick was creating offense in so many ways during his draft year, and his underlying numbers really stood out. That's why we saw his stock rise, and then he's taken an even bigger step forward since then in terms of being a dynamic player and creating offense. I think Ryan Suzuki is a smart player, just like his brother. He's able to create offense quite well, particularly through his playmaking abilities, but he doesn't seem to have that dynamic ability quite yet. You get flashes of it, you kind of see it from time to time, but it hasn't been as consistent as Nick. But I think that this kind of, you know, if we're going to loop back to the Canucks here, is that, you know, I know a lot of people may be concerned about taking someone like Soderstrom at 10th or possibly trading down and targeting a defenseman a few picks later. I think that that's leading to why there should be an importance placed on defensemen in the first round, because if you're not going to be able to get a player like Soderstrom there, you're not going to be able to get them same caliber at 40 or further down, but you might be able to get a falling player like a Lavoie or, you know, maybe a Suzuki. That's probably too optimistic, but a player of that ilk could end up sitting there at 40th, and you're going to get that dynamic scoring winger that you hope will take the next step after taking a defenseman at 10th. So there is some gamesmanship always to the draft and trying to figure out who's going to go where. You want to have the best player available, but you do kind of have to figure out how you're going to construct the your team going forward.
I do kind of wonder about Spencer Knight and if another goalie can push into the first round. And the reason I bring it up is you look at what Carter Hart was able to do as a young goalie too. Jordan Binnington, it isn't as young as people think he is. He's 25. He's already had a lot of AHL experience before he got called up. But could we potentially see, outside of Spencer Knight, another goalie push up a bit to the first round? And again, that would maybe push down another one of those skilled forwards, because we're going to see defensemen go in the first round. It's going to happen. Even though we only project one or two in the top 10, in the first round, there'll probably be about at least 7, 8 to 10 defensemen that go.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that after we kind of reach 15th overall, there's going to be a cluster of defensemen that are going to be, you know, attractive. And that's, you know, Hanola, Mikko Kokkonen, Thomas Harley probably leads that group. You have Ante Honka, who I think is an underrated defenseman, just because people think that he plays a soft game, but he's such a smart skater and can create offense in so many ways that I think he's someone whose stock has fallen for reasons that shouldn't be there. You have the defenseman from the CHL with Lassie Thompson, Kaden Korzak, you have Maurice Seider from Germany. There's all these defensemen that I think are defensible late first round picks that are going to kind of, you know, slide their way in there. And in terms of the goaltending, I think that Spencer Knight is going to be kind of alone on his own in the first round in terms of goaltenders. I know a lot of scouts are very high on his game just because he has all the tools, he has the size, he has all the things that you're looking for in a goaltender to develop into being hopefully a number one goaltender. But after that, I do feel that there's kind of a step down in terms of this draft class in terms of goaltenders. Mads Søgaard is the second-ranked North American defenseman, and I view him as having a lot of flaws to his game. I think the next goalie that we will see go in the draft will be the Peter Kochev. Kochetkov? There we go. Nailed it.
Damn European names.
Yeah, yeah. I'm terrible with Russian names. But I think he's going to be the next goalie to go in the early second round. Mm. And he's, if I'm not mistaken, he's a draft plus one goaltender as well. So it's not the greatest year for goaltenders, but they're at the top, Knight and that the Russian goalie, I think, are definitely going to set themselves apart.
I keep coming back to this name, and especially if we're talking late first round. There is risk because he's older. He didn't get drafted last year, and he turns 20 in less than 2 weeks. Brett Leeson with Prince Albert. Obviously, him being older, he's expected to be a lot better in his age group right now in the Major Junior League. But that said, he is older. He's got size. He's got a great goal-scoring ability. Is the team that gets him in the late first actually going to get a guy who's able to step into the NHL maybe sooner than some of the guys that you see maybe going in the top 10? And as a result, is that a better, perhaps, payoff as opposed to getting someone who's younger that might arguably have a little bit more upside?
Yeah, that's definitely possible. And I think you can look at Tanner Pearson now with the Canucks, is that he kind of had a similar trajectory and drafted out. And then if I'm not mistaken, he went directly to the AHL after his draft year, which is the same thing that a team like whoever selects Brett Leeson could do. And that is an advantage, the ability to take a first round player and immediately get him into your system and into your AHL group. It definitely has some value there. I think that, you know, he's a really good story in terms of how he developed his game and how he sees the opportunity in front of him. He's putting ridiculous underlying numbers on there. Anytime he and Cole Fonstad are out on the ice, they just dictate the offense to an unreal amount. You know, I think that Leason is in that late first is a really intriguing bet. I could see a team with multiple first-round picks taking that, you know, taking Leason just for the fact that, you know, they can insert him into their AHL lineup and there is a better chance of him making an impact in the NHL quicker than, you know, someone who, you know, would be taken at 18 and then probably have another year or two of junior and then start their professional career from there.
Could I run this theory by you then? Let's say the Canucks trade down, they pick up another pick late in the first. Is Brett Leason a guy that you'd be curious to see in a Canucks uniform? Because you're adding him to a pool that already has Besser and Pettersson at the NHL level with Bo Horvat as well. And if this team is serious about, you know, taking that next step next year, as they were talking about, Brett Leason having, you know, a young, dynamic, goal-scoring winger, or forward for that matter, he's a center technically, would actually help out in that argument, no?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think from a thought process, I think that would make sense if they were to acquire another pick is to go for someone like Leason because they're going to want to take that next step forward.
And your first pick could still be a guy like Soderstrom or whoever you like in the mid-teens.
Yeah, the long-term projection. Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think that way you're fixing a need that you're hopefully fixing a need now while still keeping your eyes at the future of building that pipeline. So I think it's entirely possible. I don't know if Brett Leason is the one that they would want to go with, but I definitely could see the justification for that. I think it does kind of loop back to the, you know, a lot of fans hoping they had more picks so that they could do things like that because now they're in a position where, you know, they're hoping to do it on the draft floor. And that's, you know, that I haven't taken an in-depth look at who has what picks and where because there's still, you know, a lot of settling to do. But I don't expect there to be a team that would want to do that because of the fact that the teams that have those extra first round picks are more than likely going to want to do the same things in terms of accumulating more picks and more assets.
And it's also one of those things of what do you take at that range? Do you go for a safer pick like a Leason that could come in and play, but what is the ultimate upside at the NHL level? Is he going to be a surefire top six winger who can score? Or is he more likely to be a big physical forward that plays on your third line, for instance?
Yeah, exactly.
And what do you want to go for at that range?
Yeah, and I think that Leeson's a great story, as I mentioned before, but I think that I would be leaning more towards him being a third liner who can chip in some offense rather than being a play driver at the NHL level.
So that brings me to a couple of players that aren't getting as much hype, that are a bit more undersized compared to Cole Caulfield as well. And Caulfield, for many good reasons, is being projected to go a bit higher, and there's a lot of buzz around him. But Jacob Pelletier, who's a center who plays out of the QMJHL and with the Moncton Wildcats, and also Nicholas Robertson, too, another undersized forward from the CHL ranks. These guys are both the 5'9", 5'8 range, and they're projected to go later in that first round, or could be more like DeBrincat and go in the 30s to 40s range. How intriguing are those players and how far off are they from a guy like Cole Caulfield?
I don't think they're very far off Cole Caulfield. I think that everyone is really excited about Cole Caulfield and he's kind of been, you know, seen his stock rise just because of his ability to create goals. But I think that the two that you mentioned there are very intriguing options. Particularly Nicholas Robertson seems to be a player it's 110% all the time.
Yeah.
There's no slowdown. There's no, you know, he's not taking a second off of his shift. He's not going to let, you know, things go by. He's going to be 110% all the time. And that's a really encouraging trait to see in an undersized player is that, you know, even if he's going to be overpowered or overmatched, he's not going to give up on the puck. He's going to find alternative ways to, you know, engage his opponents. And I think he's someone really encouraging. I think that Pelletier is more of a you know, I don't want to say perimeter player, and I don't want to say he avoids contact, but I think he's more of a player that will smartly engage rather than constantly being in your face, and that allows him to then use his abilities as a playmaker and as a passer to create offense in that sense. So they're two different kind of ways, but I think that both of them do have a really good offensive upside that I could, you know, will be less than Cole Caulfield's, but I think that there is something there in terms of the relative value to where they will be ranked.
Well, and that's kind of, we keep looking for the next Alex DeBrincat. But that would also mean somebody you take in the second round as opposed to somebody you take in the top 10 like Cole Caulfield, who could go in the top 10, but more likely in that 15 to 20 range, if we're being honest about where he gets drafted. But in Robertson, it's interesting, and his game is a bit different than DeBrincat, maybe closer to Brendan Gallagher in some sense, as far as the way he plays. Maybe not as physical and as much of a S disturber as a guy like Brendan Gallagher is. But I kind of wonder, those are two players that have first round talent, but I'd like to go in the second round. And if you're looking for value and high upside, to your point, if you take a defenseman in the first round, if you do that, and if you want to go for that undersized player that has a higher upside, maybe you do that at 40.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the huge reason why I think myself and a lot of other people have beat the drum about trying to acquire more picks and things like that, because I think that there's always a lot of intriguing options in that range from 30 to 50, because that's when everyone's list kind of splits apart from there. You know, the first 15 are generally about the same, but after that, it goes everywhere. And then you have a lot of players that you think should be first round talents or have the ability to, you know, have the same skill level, will be sitting there in that range. And I think that's where a lot of teams clean up and do really well. And we see that with, you know, Sebastian Aho as examples, as players like that. So yeah, if you want to use that 40th pick as a swing for the fences high upside, I think that either one of those two are really good options. You can go down a different avenue. You know, maybe you go for more dependable, gritty winger like an Albin Grayaway. I would throw Nils Höglander in there as well, as that kind of, you know, undersized forward who just doesn't seem to give up and has some offensive upside. He's another player that I would be intrigued at for the Canucks at that spot, if that's the avenue they're going down.
One name when we're regarding smaller prospects, maybe late first, probably more like early second, Alex Campbell, you know, teammate of Newhook over there in BCHL.
He is so highly talented, man.
150 pounds, 5'10", so obviously not the biggest guy, but he's got the skill, right? He's got the numbers to back it up playing with Alex Newhook there. What do you think about this guy if we're talking about, you know, smaller prospects who still are justified if you want to take him in the second?
It's funny, you said his name, and I was like, I remember someone being really high on him. Yeah. That's like, he's got skill.
I watched a lot of Alex Newhook this year, and I try to watch as much as possible, and anytime I watched Newhook, I was just so impressed by Alex Campbell. And I'm kind of wondering, as much as we give Newhook credit for Campbell's success, I saw a lot of times it was Campbell driving the play.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think he's a really interesting player. Again, in my viewings, I view him as a player that just kind of seems to be really smart, engages really well, can create offense in a variety of ways, and play really well with a player like Newhook, who also likes to push the pace when he's on his game. So I think he's a really intriguing player, and I'm kind of excited to see what he can do in the NCAA next year, because I think that he could make hay at that level.
You know, absolutely, and we kind of look for the next Tyler Madden type. Alex Campbell, similar game to Tyler Madden to some degree, with the size not being the biggest. Campbell's also pretty thin, but very fast, super dynamic with his skating. His puck handling skills are off the chart. But a guy who's not going to go in the first round could be there even in the third round. Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that you can't teach the skill, you can't teach these puck skills or the hockey IQ that some of these kids have, but you can teach them how to properly add the weight so that they can continue to be effective. And I think that Tyler Madden's a perfect example of that, is that I think he's probably added about 5-10 pounds since draft year, and he's still able to do the things that has made him effective in the first half of the year. So I think that that's a good thought process on how to extract more value out of those late round picks.
All right, we'll get to a lot of your questions. A lot of great ones have been flooding into our 650-650 text message inbox and also on Twitter. We'll get to them and more right here on the home of Vancouver hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Satyar Shah and John Chang on Sportsnet 650.
It's probably prohibitive. It's probably more than you should pay to do this. So in other words, you're doing it for the image. You're doing it so you can say, I did it. You're doing it so you can get up on stage and pick first and say, or second, and say, here we are. We're the Canucks. We're hosting the draft. My guess is you'd overpay for a little bit of sizzle and flash, and that doesn't sound like Jim Benning to me. I don't think he's about flash. We did the Sedin deal because we felt there were the two best players and maybe the two only players in that draft that would be legitimate longtime NHL players, and we were right, except for Barrett Jackman and maybe one other guy.
That is Brian Burke, who joined the starting lineup this morning. Perry Solkowski, James Cebulski, and Rick Dhaliwal talking about what it would take to move up to the first overall and select Jack Hughes. And obviously, this draft isn't as thin as the 1999 one was, which allowed Brian Burke to move up and get Henrik and Daniel Sedin second and third overall. But Ryan Beach is in studio for a full hour with myself and John Jang. And if you have any requests, by the way, for Throwback Thursday, send them in to DJ Honey Brown, Bick Nazar.
Got one more segment.
Yeah, one more segment, one more tune coming in throwback style. But on the question of what it takes to move up to first overall, my take on this, guys, is the Canucks simply do not have enough assets to part away with that many to move up to that pick. And if they did part with everything possible to get that pick, they'd have such a hard road ahead to try to make up for the ground they lose that I'm not even sure it's worth doing it.
Yep.
And if they had enough assets, though, and had accumulated more picks over the years, maybe you would be able to make that deal. I just don't see it being realistic at this stage.
Yeah.
I agree.
If you were the Golden Knights before, making that Mark Stone trade.
Yeah, if you had extra firsts and if you had extra seconds. If you had, like, say, two extra seconds this year and you had drafted a couple extra players in the second and third round the past couple of years, maybe you had enough assets to say, you know what, we can go all in and trade a few firsts and we can package together all these guys. But if you move out even a Bo Horvat and a Troy Stetcher and two future first-round picks and Thatcher Demko and something else, well, it's great that you get Jack Hughes and nobody's going to complain about it, but how many years is it going to take for you to stockpile the rest of the roster to take advantage of Hughes' prime year coming up, same as Elias Pettersson? It's a hard road.
Yeah, and I think that the cost certainty of the entry-level contracts has taken a big step forward in terms of importance, and teams recognize that. And so, that does add value to, when the Sedins were there wasn't as much value placed on that compared to now, where having a player like Jack Hughes or Kaapo Kakko or whoever to step into your NHL lineup and make that kind of money is a huge, has huge more value than just what they do on the ice.
And we have a few comments and questions on this, so we'll get to some of these trade proposals, Ryan, and throw them by you. This one, for the first overall pick, the 2019 10th overall, 2020 first, DiPietro and Virtanen to New Jersey. Does that get it done?
I don't believe so, because I think that what you're taking away from New Jersey is Jack Hughes making an impact next year. And Virtanen is not going to do that. DiPietro will be starting his professional career. So from that sense, it doesn't make sense. And Taylor Hall is a pending free agent at the end of that next year. And I think that making a move like that wouldn't help their case to be like, we're ready to take a step forward. But Jack Hughes certainly does.
Let's do one more trade proposal. This one's from Andrew Drayson from Ocean Park. Not for the first overall pick, but for third overall with Chicago. Send the 10th overall pick, Markstrom, for third overall, and you take back Corey Crawford, and he's always injured, and that contract.
That's a good idea. I think it would require a lot more from there, because I think that Chicago probably isn't that concerned about something like that. But I think that that's a good starting point. I think it would be plus, plus, plus.
Maybe if you take back Brent Seabrook's contract.
Yeah.
No,
maybe
thank you.
Then you start talking.
No,
but then, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's going to be really difficult to move up. And if you are going to move up, you either have to take on some really, really bad contracts or mortgage a ton of draft picks.
Yeah, and does, if Chicago goes down the road of Bowen Byram, is there that value of shedding yourself of a contract? Is it enough to then, take away the possibility of having your top six of including a Boyquist, Byram, and Yuka Harju? I would think not, personally. Mm.
Gary in North Burnaby has this for Kevin. That's her name now. If Broberg and Soderstrom, the two Swedish defensemen, are available, who would Kevin take? What are the differences between them? Because Gary personally likes Soderstrom just a little bit more here.
I'd love to hear Kevin's opinion.
Kevin's a great guy. Yeah.
Yeah,
owes me money, though.
We talked about it last week, and I got quite a few engagements afterwards. Personally, I have Soderstrom higher than Broberg. In my viewings, I found that Soderstrom just thinks the game a little bit better. Broberg's probably more flash and dash. But he just hasn't been able to create offense at the professional level, where Soderstrom, has done so at the SHL level, despite not being so flashy. So I think that I think for myself and quite a few people, Soderstrom is higher than Broberg. And we're kind of seeing that reflective in the various, public rankings.
Following up on Soderstrom, Tambier asks through a 650-650 text line, how Soderstrom's shot?
It's pretty good. I think he has a good, he has a good slap shot. He has a good snapshot as well. I think I'd like to see him move more with the puck when he has the shot. But I think that overall it is a good shot in terms of, velocity and accuracy.
Here's one interesting one. And forget upside. Brooke wants to know which player taken at 10th could be in the NHL as soon as next season.
I would have to say none. I think that this draft class, due to various reasons, one of which is players not being ready, and then the various players committed to the NCAA, I don't think we're going to see very many of these prospects drafted this year make the NHL next year. I think we'll see Hughes and Kakko. And then because there's a lot of those USA players who are already committed to their various NCAA programs, that's going to eat up a lot. And then I don't envision players like Cousins or Krebs or or even Byram being ready to, you know, get professional reps. It could happen based on whatever team they go to, that may, you know, accelerate their progress, but I don't think that they'd be optimally ready to step into an NHL lineup.
I got a question here from Bobby. 650, 650, you can keep sending them in, Ryan Beach, sitting in here with the Playbook Sportsnet 650. Turcotte or Soderstrom at 10? And I'll rephrase this question. If Turcotte's available there at 10, do you just run to the podium as soon as you can, announce that name, and run away? Because that's a bit of a steal.
Yes, I agree with you, because I think that myself and a few others are kind of have been debating back and forth if Turcotte is the second best center available in this draft class, and I think you can make a very reasonable argument that he is. I think that he's just had a year where he hasn't been able to stay healthy. Circumstantially, he's behind Hughes on the program, and that has, you know, made him kind of go under the radar a bit. But I think that, you know, if he is there at 10, that's the player you're taking.
We have one question here from Tony Roberts, and it's about Connor McMichael. What do you think of him?
I like his game, to be honest with you. I think that at the range of where the Canucks will be picking, I don't think he will be available at 10th or at 40th. At 10th, I feel he's a bit of a reach, Mm-hmm. At 40th, I don't think he'll be available. You know, I think he's got a good, well-rounded offensive game. You know, he probably can add a little bit more size and weight. He plays with, you know, with speed. He thinks the game well. So there's a lot to like about his game, but I don't think that there's going to be a match if we're thinking specifically about the Canucks.
Yeah, that's one of the things for the Canucks, too. What are they going to value? And we saw a lot of questions here, and Tony posed another one. It'd be great if the Canucks had another pick in the top 50. How can the Canucks, do you think, get that pick in the top 50? And it comes down to the best way to do so would be to move down from 10. But if Soderstrom's there, is it worth them moving down to get an extra pick in the second round, or is the value higher to stay at number 10? So how do you accrue another second round draft pick if you're not willing to move down?
I think that the Canucks aren't going to be wanting to do this, but the way to do so is to leverage their cap space to take on players with 1 year left on their contract and eat up that money to get more picks. An example would be someone like Ryan Callahan. Tampa Bay is obviously going to want to make moves given what happened, and they're going to need to because of their cap space. Ryan Callahan has 1 year left. Do that for an extra pick here. You know, those are kind of the options that would be available if they don't want to trade down, because I don't view them as having any players that they're willing to part with to get a high value pick in any sense.
Here's a question about the U18s. Does your evaluation change if you see positive tournaments from guys like Krebs and Newhook in different environments? And maybe specifically a guy like Newhook, because he'll have a chance to play with players in his draft year that are more of his skill level already.
Yeah, I think that it's not going to be something that sees any players see their stock dramatically rise. I think Newhook is kind of a player that we see hovering around the 15 range, but I think that if he has a good showing, he could push himself back into being closer to 10, and that's kind of the same mentality as there, is that I'm curious to see how he can play in terms of quality of teammates and playing with someone like Cousins, as he's doing right now, and then also the quality of competition, because, you know, he's generally playing against, you know, in the BCHL, there's definitely a drop-off when you go from your first and second line downwards, so he can kind of feast on them. So I'm intrigued to see how he can perform against, you know, teams with more depth when he's being, you know, asked to, you know, kind of make offense in that sense. So in the long run, it's not a something that's going to see someone's stock rise from 40th to 20th or something like that, but it could push them ahead a couple spots of another player just because you're kind of collecting different kind of information than what's available during the regular season.
Another trade proposal, because people are still interested to see what it would take to get that first overall pick. Here's one unsigned. A trade starting idea for New Jersey would be the 10th overall pick, Brock Besser, and your second round pick. First of all, is that enough in your estimation? And secondly, is that too much for the Vancouver Canucks?
I don't think it's enough. I think that any sort of trade that's going to see them move up to first or second is going to require that player of Brock Besser's ilk to be in, at least included in it. And I think that the Canucks and fans rightfully don't have appetite to do so. They're in a position now where they need more players. And, you know, as much as Jack Hughes is going to be a difference maker, I think that taking out Brock Besser and inserting a player like Jack Hughes probably doesn't have the same some value in the long run is keeping Besser and accumulating more players from 10th overall, in various other words. So I think that, you know, I know fans are really wanting to and really excited to possibly get up in Jack Hughes, but unfortunately the lottery balls didn't go their way, and any move would be prohibitive to taking the next step forward as an organization.
The only way they could have moved up the first, in my estimation, was to your point, winning the lottery or getting the third pick. And then if you have the third pick, maybe you can parlay it up and do something. But even so, it comes down to how high the other team would be on a Bowen Byram, for instance, at number three. And here's a question from Vic from Kelowna. If Byram is so good, why isn't he going number one? D clearly have more value than forwards. Feels like he's getting overhyped. The kid may not wasn't even a top 10 player at the start of the year.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point. I think that defensemen, you know, they see their stock rise and go from there. I think that no matter what, this year was always going to be Jack Hughes at number one, just because of how dynamic he is and how much offense he can create in that sense. And then Kako has seen his stock rise to the point where he cemented himself as number two. And I think that the return on either one of those picks are going to be immediate and much more impactful. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think of a better descriptor, but I think that that's kind of what it is that either one of those are going to be more impactful than Bowen Byram is going to be. But I think he's probably cemented himself as being that top five pick on his own. There are definitely some flaws to his game that I think some people kind of overlook when analyzing him just because of how good he is at the things that he does well. But I think that those are things that do take into consideration and will ultimately see him, you know, why he isn't pushing above the other two.
We did kind of talk about this earlier on, and John posed a question based on what we saw from Kale McCarr and Quinn Hughes and maybe defensemen rise, but defensemen are going to rise regardless. So Dan and Abby's asking, can we see a similar situation as last year with Kokaniemi, Barrett Hayton, but this time with defensemen? Which defensemen do you think are most likely to move into that top 10 range?
I think that Soderstrom might be the one who leads the group. I think Thomas Harley, if he does have another good U18s, could see himself put himself in that conversation. But I think that because there's that center group of Cousins and Turcotte and, you know, maybe Zegras to some degree, those kind of guys are ones that, you know, you could project being centers, and they'll, you know, they'll kind of prevent the defenseman rising as much.
Here's a question from Amar on Twitter. It is a trade proposal, but it's not involving the first overall pick. He asks, can Christian Vasilainen of the Winnipeg Jets be the next Mikko Rantanen? What would he cost? Would he actually be worth the 10th overall draft pick? You're getting a guy who was drafted not that long ago and maybe is a little bit further ahead in his development. Helps out the Canucks sooner.
Yeah, that could be an avenue that I think that the Canucks go down is trading that pick for a more advanced player. They've done it in the past, and I would say it hasn't really worked great for them, but I do see that that's an option possibility for them. I like Christian Vesalainen's game quite a bit. I think that though he plays the game at a bit slower pace than Rantanen, I think he tries to kind of slow the game down and then attack from there, and that might be the difference from him. But I do think that Winnipeg probably isn't going to want to trade a player of him for a pick. They're going to want to, if they are going to move him, it's going to be for immediate help now to keep their window open, depending on what happens this year, right?
Jared Stepp has this point. Brandon Sutter went 11th overall, but what players do you see having similar expectations, ceilings, but ultimately could underwhelm years later because maybe they're considered more NHL ready without that infinite upside that we like out of first round picks?
That's a good question. I don't want to say Dylan Cousins because I'm a really big fan of his game, but I think he might be the player that kind of lacks that that overall upside. I'm drawing a blank on the third WHL forward right
Doc.
Now. Doc, there we go. That's the one I was thinking of. Kirby Doc is the kind of that same kind of player that, you know, he may not have that high end offensive upside or anything like that, but I think he could be similar player that ilk, is that he just kind of, you know, he's an NHL player who doesn't kind of live up to that value at where he's selected.
How similar do you think? Because I keep hearing people make the comparisons to Ryan Getzlaff with Joel Thornton when it comes to Kirby Doc, and I'm just like, pump the brakes a little bit, because as talented as Kirby Doc is, he's probably more in line with a Logan Brown than he is a player of that caliber, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair, and I think Logan Brown is an interesting prospect, but I think that that's probably more correctly in line of what he could be from there.
So. And he went 11 overall back in 2016, Logan Brown. A good prospect,
yeah.
But I don't think anybody at this stage is projecting him to be a surefire number one center or number two center, but he could be a 2/3 with size, playmaking ability, but isn't as physical as people want him to be, and also not as good of a goal scorer as people want him to be. And that does discount you a little bit when it comes to overall upside.
Yeah, and I think we're starting to stray away from players like Brandon Sutter. I think that at the time that Sutter was drafted, there was a lot of more stock put in a player who can play the right way, who's good in all three zones and things like that. But I think we're seeing players now who have more offensive upside, rising to the top. Teams are understanding the value in those players and adjusting accordingly. So, you know, it's kind of hard when we, you know, ask the question is who's going to be the next Brandon Sutter out of that group. And it's kind of struggling. And I think I'm not doing justice to players like Cousins or Doc, because I think that players like them will actually have a higher upside in terms of the fact that they can think the game better, they skate better than Sutter does.
If you know the answer to which player would be under, maybe not value, but like underperform years from now, you would literally be the three-eyed Raven. So I think that'd be very impressive if you could come up with that answer right here on the spot. Duncan asked this, and again, it's a theoretical, hypothetical situation, but because Tampa and Pittsburgh had those sweeps recently in the playoffs, if the Canucks were to pedal the 10th overall pick, Duncan wonders, what could you get back from their roster that the Canucks might be interested in receiving in trade to give Tampa some flexibility? Pittsburgh, same thing.
Like kind of taking the players from them, like who could come out
either,
of
that? Either players or prospects from Tampa's systems or Pittsburgh systems that the Canucks could trade for with the 10th overall pick.
Yeah, I think that for those kind of teams is that they're going to look to trade away more assets than anything else. So I think that they're going to look at, you know, I think we could see a scenario where Tampa Bay is going to, you know, leverage their first round pick or maybe their second round pick next year to try to get themselves out of Ryan Callahan's deal because, you know, the other victim that might, you know, the other person who might be the victim of the cap crunch for them is Tyler Johnson. And I think that they have more value of having a player like Tyler Johnson than Callahan for one more year in that pick because they have players that are going to kind of come through from there. But, you know, I think that the Canucks can target these teams, them, Las Vegas, Toronto, Winnipeg, and try to extract players or more picks out of them by taking these 1 year, 2 year bad contracts and absorbing them to kind of accumulate more assets in that sense. So, you know, I don't see there being matches of those teams, you know, wanting the 10th overall pick because they're going to want to go more now players. Mm-hmm. They're going to want to get players that they can insert into their lineup to help them take the next step forward, and getting 10th overall doesn't really help them take that next step forward now.
And like Callahan to me is interesting because one of the quotes that recently Jim Benning gave to the province was the Canucks are to maybe add some gritty players to supplement their skill players. And I know a lot of Canucks fans are like, whoa, like do not go into free agency, overspend on gritty players. But if you want a guy that is a bit gritty, two-way game, Ryan Callahan, why not take that contract
on?
2 years
left or one?
1 year left.
1 year left, yeah.
And if you can get a second or a third even, like, would you do that?
That's
and that way you don't have to go and sign a player like that in free agency. Yep. It's a 1 year deal and he's gone after a year, plus you get an asset back in return.
That's exactly the avenue that I would go down because I would be more hesitant to do long term deals for players like Michael Ferland and Wayne Simmons, who, yes, they would probably have a more immediate impact in year one or two, but then we're talking 3, 4, 5, which is what these players are going to command on the open market, and that's where the concern is. And then when these players like Pettersson and Hughes and now Besser are out of their entry-level contracts, you're then hindering your ability to supplement that core because you're getting these players who are trending downwards. So, you know, Ryan Callahan seems like the perfect example. You know, I don't think he can play on Tampa Bay anymore, but he could, you know, he could probably handle a regular shift with the Canucks or be that 13th forward until injuries inevitably hit and provide that grittiness and be a leader in the locker room because he's, you know, he was the captain with the Rangers and has been, you know, a good player for Tampa, has been a good foot soldier, can kind of show them, you know, the way to win and show them the way not to win.
Right. And, you know, like he's a guy, obviously not as big and as physical as a Michael Ferland or even Wayne Simmons, but probably keeps up with the play a bit better than a Wayne Simmons at this stage. Maybe not as physical and not as intimidating, but he battles. And if you're looking for battle level and guys that will defend teammates when needed, Callahan will mix it up if necessary.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, you're not going to play him 15, 16 minutes. No. You're going to try to keep him around 10, and he'll go and bang some bodies and chip in offensively. And, you know, in a pinch, throw him up in the, you know, the top nine to kind of help other players. And then, you know, maybe the Canucks take a 20-20 second for the you know, the burden of the contract. And then at the trade deadline, if the Canucks are in the playoff mix, they have an asset to add a player at that time. And then I think fans will have more of an appetite to move an extra asset like that pick for a rental, trying to make the playoffs rather than, you know, only having their second round pick and then trying to add from there. So I think that that's a good way to forward think, a good way to get the grittiness that they're looking for without hurting themselves in the long term.
I don't imagine Tampa has any interest in trading away Cal Foote because maybe he's still a big part of their long-term plans for that defense. But in a vacuum, do you do 10th overall for Cal Foote?
I would not, but I could see the Canucks having the appetite to do so because Cal Foote could probably get NHL games next year for them. Mm-hmm. I think that overall, I think that, you know, Cal Foote has already eaten the first year of his entry-level contract, if I'm not mistaken, with this year. So you only have 2 years left with him, and then you're going to have to kind of make a decision from there. But if you go with one of the defensemen available, you're probably going for hoping for a higher upside, but also the ability to control that cost for a few more years. So I like you kind of alluded to there, I don't think there's going to be a match because I think that Tampa Bay wants Cal Foote to be part of their defense next year with the turnover. But I think that that's, you know, I could see the Canucks going down that avenue as well.
And then a quick thought, since we were talking about Cal, I'll go to his younger brother, draft-eligible Nolan Foote out of the Kelowna Rockets.
Yeah, Nolan Foote is an intriguing player. I think he's a player who's going to be available there at 40th. In my viewings over the last couple of years, I found him to not be particularly engaged all the time. Kind of floats around, but he does kind of have that size and skill that you kind of hope for from a player of his ilk. But I would be concerned about, you know, what is his overall upside going to be? How much can he drive offense and how engaged he's going to be?
Here's a question from LC. Who are three players that could be available for the Canucks with their 40th overall pick that you like?
It'll be interesting because we're still obviously shaking everything out. Yeah. And there's a lot of times the players that I see that all are ranked a lot lower than I would do so. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for the forward ranks, we kind of talked to them prior to the break. There is Albin Grayaway as a player I'd be interested in. Nils Höglander as well. Those are kind of the two that stand out to me in terms of how they play. They have different skill sets, but they both really stand out at what they do. Defensemen, I think that a player like Lassie Thompson may still end up being there. If not, then Henry Thurn with the program is, I think, a player who's been underrated quite a bit. Michael Gildon is a forward that I also like, but that might be a bit of a reach for him at that spot. Those are kind of the guys that stand out to me as well. And then you mentioned Jacob Pelletier and Nicholas mm-hmm. Robertson. Those are players that also that I do like in that range as well.
We have another question here. I lost who asked it, but I will pose the question anyways. Is there a player that's not getting nearly enough draft hype that you are very high on?
I like Honka quite a bit. I think that he's a player that people look at his game and they view him as soft or not being engaged, but I think he's just a smart player that when he knows he's not going to make an impact, he just doesn't care. So mm-hmm. then he just doesn't do anything, which isn't a great trait to have, but I think that that kind of speaks to what he's doing out there. So I think he's a player that's getting really underrated, that I think there'd be a lot of value in him as a player.
That's very interesting as well. Now, before we get out, a couple questions about Canucks value, players who have value and also a Canucks prospect. Will Lockwood, who's been talked about a lot, who's already said he's going back, and that's already been decided, he's going back to Michigan for his senior year.
Named captain.
What do you think of Will Lockwood and his long-term potential anyways? Because there has been some worry that the Canucks may miss out on this player and he might become an undrafted free agent next summer.
Yeah, that's it. That's definitely still possible. I think that teams are not concerned, but it's always something that's on the back of their mind is that players that go back for their senior year could just decide not to sign in and hit the open market August 15th after their senior year, and that's entirely a possibility for Lockwood. I think that entering into the season, there was a lot of questions about what he was going to be coming off of another shoulder surgery, if I'm not mistaken. He even mentioned publicly that like he's going to have to change his game, and what set him apart from other prospects at the same offensive output is his ability to be physical, to kind of be a little wrecking ball out there, and that's obviously what led to his injuries, but that's what set him apart. So I think that this year he's done a good job in changing his game and adapting it. He's been much smarter in terms of how he engages physically, how he engages to get the puck. He's much more elusive in terms of trying to dig pucks out, which has allowed him to, you know, be more opportunistic, which is really good. So the long way of saying this is that entering the year, there probably wasn't a lot of, you know, excitement to be had about him, but I think he's reasserted himself as being a possibility at the NHL level, as being kind of a bottom six guy who pushes the pace, who can play PK and things like that. Ultimately, if the Canucks are unable to sign him, it would hurt their prospect pool, but I don't think we should, you know, I don't think it'd be end of the world kind of thing, right? So
yeah, he still has a long way to go to become an NHL player. Obviously, just like signing undrafted free agents, you want to give yourself as many lottery balls as possible, so you want to keep him in the fold, but mm-hmm. would it be end of the day if he leaves your organization? Probably not, but it would mean you have to start adding more picks and more prospects because you got to make up for the gap of that draft only having one player signed. out of 2016 with the Gio Levy.
Yeah, and
that's the concern. You can't have drafts. You only have one player come out of that draft.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're probably putting the cart before the horse. I think that, you know, we're going to get to March or April next year, and he's probably going to sign at the Canucks, because unless there's drastic changes, there's still going to be a path for someone like mm-hmm. him to go through the AHL and then make the NHL in that bottom six role who pushes the pace. And I know the Canucks are, you know, excited about his potential, so that, you know, we're projecting and talking about worst case scenarios and kind of, you know, being a damper on what he can be. But I think that, you know, ultimately, he's done the right things to reassert himself as being a possibility in the future.
No, he had a good year.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to like about Tyler, Tyler Madden, Will Lockwood, Madden as well.
You're not wrong. Lots to like about Tyler Madden.
Two more questions we'll get to. Dean and Cloverdale essentially asking, do the Canucks have roster players that could package to get another top 15, 20 pick? And I'm assuming we're not counting guys like Besser and obviously Bo Horvat and stuff like that. But do the Canucks have players they can get a top 15 pick for?
I don't think of any.
Yeah,
I think that the only player that we might see that will be hard for the Canucks organization to move is Jake Virtanen. And I think that if they're going to be moving someone like him, it's to fill an immediate hole. It won't be for more futures, because I don't think that they have the appetite to do so. After that, you know, we're not going to see the big four move. I don't think we're going to see a Demko moved. Maybe someone like Hutton does eventually get moved, but I don't see him having enough value.
Not even a second round pick.
Exactly. And again, I think that if they're going to move him, it's going to be for an immediate piece. So they're kind of in that position where they want to have more immediate pieces, mm-hmm. and any type of players that they do eventually move will be to fix that need.
Well, and the final question here, we know that Quinn Hughes and Thatcher Demko will be at the World Championship. So this question asks, with Hughes and Demko at the World Championships representing Team USA, what does USA Hockey know that the media does not know?
That they're more willing to bring these young kids and give them an opportunity at this event?
Yeah, I mean, as far as what the media doesn't know, I think everybody's been very high on Quinn Hughes. Yeah. And Demko, this wouldn't be the first time.
No, exactly. I think that the American program has always been willing to bring younger players to this event. This year, they're actually going a little bit more veteran, but they are still have the Quinn Hughes and the Demkos and Caden Primos. And it's all about their long-term development with eyes on things like the Olympics. So, you know, I'm excited to see those players and what they're going to do. Hopefully, Hughes has a bigger role than last year. It'll be exciting to see.
All right, we do have time for one more because we're pushing this as far as we can. Andy in Richmond, we've kind of talked about this before, but people do tune in at different times and may have not heard. Do you see any teams between 3 and 9 going off the board and pushing someone unexpected down to the Canucks? If so, who? Like, which teams would go off the board, do you think, ahead of the Canucks?
I can't really view anyone, and I think that no matter what, there's not going to be a player that's going to be really off the board out mm-hmm. of this group. I think that no matter what, we're kind of talking about a bunch of players in that group that are going to go. If, let's say, Krebs goes at 7th, I'm not going to be shocked by that, but I could also see him following to 12th. And, you know, there are players that are kind of ahead of that group, and I'd probably say Byram and Turcotte are kind of ahead of that group, but I don't view anyone else as being a huge reach at that point.
We've had you here for 2 weeks, and you haven't talked up John Beecher yet, and that's a little disappointing.
It's a great name. You know, his great names per 60 is through the roof. Yeah.
Name per 60, that's the all-name team.
That's yeah. it.
All right, Ryan, well, we're going to have you in studio again next week, and we'll do as many of these full-hour shows as possible leading up to the NHL draft, and we'll have some news for next week on a special draft show. Prospect show that we're trying to unveil on Sportsnet 650. Could be a weekend show that involves Ryan Beach, also involves Cam Robinson.
I didn't know.
Now you know, Ryan. We're including you. We're trying to put something together for
voluntold.
Yeah.
So a lot of draft coverage is coming up. We are the draft station, the draft show, Sportsnet 650, especially the playbook, and we are going to try to extend that and do some specialty shows as well leading up to the draft and also into the offseason.
I was trying to be all secretive there. I wasn't sure where the plans were. So
yeah, you know, we're still working on getting it all done. But just to give everybody a bit of a hint that, you know, things are coming. We're going to be the source for your draft information. You want more podcasts? You want more draft talk? You're going to get it. Ryan, always a pleasure, my friend. Follow him on Twitter, @RyanBeach. Does great work for The Athletic as well. And you have some new ventures that you're doing, too.
Yeah, I'm actually contributing to Elite Prospects as well to help them with their draft coverage. I'm really excited about that because it allows me to kind of talk about players that probably fall, you know, to the wayside in these conversations. I did a post for them last week that talked about some defensemen, and one of which was Gianni Fairbrother with the Silver Tips, a defenseman in Sweden, and then some other things. So it's exciting things to kind of, you know, talk about players that we'll see in the second day, because I know that day is fast and furious and it's hard to keep up. So all information is good.
The tide's coming in at the beach.
Yes, exactly. It is. Well said. All right, Ryan, we appreciate your time.
Sportsnet 650.